an incredible sight. Merity points out a baby calf, a tangle of ripe blackberry bushes, and a distant figure taking a naked dip in a pond, no doubt thinking himself unnoticed. We laugh as we spot a miniature horse chasing a donkey around a paddock, and it's clear the tension has eased between us. It feels strange to be laughing at all with King Wilding presumably still missing. But it's not like we can leave the castle until Master Simbri sees the healer again. Still, I fidget on the hard carriage seat as I think of how quickly a shade could devastate this sleepy valley. As quickly as the raven flies, as Her Majesty would say.
"We've been busy preparing for the big harvest," the Baroness says pleasantly from the opposite seat. "With our high number of gray-eyed citizens, Elsinore trains more weather mages than any other province."
"Fascinating," I murmur. Louder, I ask, "Do you know who the Shade used to be? The one we killed last night?" The Baroness frowns, but I press. "Were any of your dead reported missing recently?"
"Not to my knowledge."
Her smile is back in place, though her tone is cooler.
"I'm sorry. It's just that we've had so much death recently. So much destruction. I prefer to focus on happier things."
"But where are the frightened villagers, the mourners?" Merity asks quietly. "Where are the people mending fences?" The Baroness locks eyes with Merity, evidently thinking how to respond. I don't know why it should take so long unless she's not telling us the truth. And I'm about to politely point that out when the carriage driver calls,
"Lady Abathel, the signal fire!"
I lean out the window and follow the Baroness's gaze to a flickering flame at the top of the next mountain. "What?" I start to ask.
"A shade attack in the next valley," the Baroness answers tensely, all her pleasant mannerisms gone. "We'll head there right away. My guard will have seen the flare and know to meet us."
The carriage veers wildly onto a new path, making Merity slide into me. I steady her with an arm around her waist, but quickly pull away when a sudden heat pulses through me.
"Are you sure the shade is in the next valley?" Merity asks a moment later, sounding out of breath.
When the Baroness asks what she means, Merity points out the window to another mountain. Another signal fire glares from an outpost on high. And on the mountain beyond that, so faint it could be a trick of the noon sun, another fire shines a plea for aid. As the carriage rushes down the wide dirt path, I look out the windows on either side, and a heavy weight settles in my stomach. There's a signal fire lit on every mountain around us. I wrap my fingers around the comforting hilt of my blade and whisper a prayer to Vaya, as Merity mutters something under her breath, perhaps summoning Lysandre. But nothing prepares either of us for the grisly sight in the next valley. For carnage and chaos unlike anything I've ever seen. This isn't a village in need of an army. This is a massacre in need of a cleanup crew. The second the carriage halts, I throw open the door and scramble out. My boots slide in someone's blood, and I lean against the carriage to steady myself as I struggle to make sense of what I'm seeing. Hollowed out buildings still burning, a smashed signpost, a stray horse shaking under the eaves of an empty blacksmith's forge, and the corpses. All the corpses. Men, women, and children strewn across each other, like they were cut down as they tried to flee. The shade didn't even bother feasting on most of them. I think I see a few stray limbs, but I can't bring myself to look close enough to know for sure. The smell hits me in a rush, threatening to bring me to my knees. And I let it. I kneel in the putrid mix of blood and mud. We're too late. Too late to help any of these people. And if the eerie wail rising into the clear sky is any indication, we're too late to help those in the other valleys as well. Vane has to have been here, forcing the monsters, or monsters, every move with whatever power his unique sight gives him. This feels calculated, organized. No shade would leave the Deadlands voluntarily, let alone wreak this much havoc without even eating its prey. And no shade knows how to coordinate attacks on this scale. Forcing another look at the wreckage, I promise myself I won't stop chasing the rogue necromancer's trail of victims until my hands are around his neck. Merity appears at my side and offers me a handkerchief. I dab my soaking face while she lets her own tears fall freely. It's only when she takes my hands that I feel I can properly breathe again. She guides me back into the carriage, where the smell is slightly more bearable, though my head spins. Her touch is all that keeps me from losing my balance until I slide onto the empty seat. The Baroness remains outside, talking in low voices with what must be her entire guard of 50 armed men. Hadrian would have sent us with more help if he knew it was this bad, I managed to say at last. Why didn't the Baroness or someone else say how many shades had been spotted? Before Merity can respond, I answer my own question. They must not have known. This must be the first attack of this scale. As Merity wipes her eyes with the back of her hand, I add softly, I wonder who the shades were, who they used to be. At this point, I think the more important question is where they are now, she whispers. It doesn't seem like anyone killed them. Last night, after the surprise shade attack, Merity asked me if I ever considered whether raising the dead was worth the risk. And finally, I have my answer. None of the dead want to become shades and hurt the loved ones who sacrificed so much to bring them back. But as Evander's parents proved, accidents happen. Accidents that could be prevented if the dead stayed where they belong. If I quit doing the one thing I've trained most of my life to do. The thought catches me by surprise. It's something Lyda might say. I shake my head to clear it. Gradually, villagers emerge from behind the shells of homes and shops, wide-eyed and deathly pale. Some are spattered with blood, and all look lost. Even the few dead in their long shrouds are clearly shaken, leaning against their living relatives for support.
We'll make room in the castle for them all, the Baroness declares to her guards.
Even from a distance, there's no mistaking the shock in her voice. She clearly had no idea how much destruction shades could cause. Or she'd have spent her time arming her soldiers with liquid fire instead of taking us on a valley tour. The earlier attacks reported to the king must have been like the shade attacks of years past. Monsters picking off livestock and the occasional late-night tavern-goer from the shadows. We emerge from the carriage to join the survivors, the sounds of someone weeping filling the air. It's one of the dead, I realize. As a living man pushes away someone beneath the shroud, then points down the road.
I'm sorry,
the man says, shaking his head as the shrouded figure clings to his arm.
Don't you understand?
His voice breaks, and something inside me cracks at the overwhelming sadness of the sound.
You could be the next to turn. One slip of your mask, and
You'd become a monster,
someone else calls.
I never knew the dead were capable of this,
a dark-haired woman stammers.
They're not,
I shout. Almost every head turns my way. Even the man arguing with his shrouded relative falls silent.
The dead can become shades, but most never do. We're careful, and so are they. They wear layers to hide their skin. We're following the same rules we always have. This was no mere accident on the part of the dead or their kin, mind. Some madman decided to break our rules, and this, I make a sweeping gesture, is the result. It doesn't mean the dead should be feared or blamed.
I say it as much to defend the shrouded figures around me as to prove to the voice in my head that we are better off with the dead here.
But this is our fault, in a way,
a woman murmurs, one of the dead.
Maybe it's best we leave. I don't want to hurt anyone.
All the dead should get out of Elsinore,
someone yells. I search for the speaker so I can glare at him, but I can't tell who said it. Not with several echoes of the sentiment passing among the survivors, and even among the Baroness's guards. The farmers and tradesmen, who make up the heart of Carthia, have always looked upon the dead with respect bordering on awe. They've dreamed of saving up enough to have their own loved ones raised. But then, most of them have never seen a shade before today.
And what about the king? Another voice demands.
Maybe, a young blue-eyed girl says as she hugs her mother's knee. The dead king will turn bad, too.
Maybe,
Baroness Abathel agrees softly, her face suddenly looking 10 years older, lined with guilt and worry and the same uncertainty that's plaguing me.
May he reign eternal,
someone cries, sounding defiant. But no one takes up the familiar refrain. I hang my head, partly because I can't see a point in arguing with people who have just lost everything. Partly because I can't stand the sight of the dead trudging away from their ruined village with nowhere to go. Not one of them uttering a protest for fear that they might hurt their families if they stay. And partly because a little voice in the back of my mind shares the blue-eyed girl's worry. And I can't seem to silence it. After a while, the weather mages from the next valley arrive, their gray eyes misting over as they draw more rain from the blue sky's passing clouds. Their movements are like a dancer's, practiced and elegant, each gesture of their hands wringing a little more water from the wisps of clouds above. Watching them work reminds me of Kasmira, and I hope she's somewhere safe. Out at sea, perhaps. A few of the more isolated buildings have already stopped burning, but others hiss as rainwater splashes their fiery insides. The guards comb through the cooling rubble, rounding up more survivors. Even Merity finds a purpose, calming the frightened horse from the forge and climbing on its back, riding past the border of the village to search for others in need of help. I join the Baroness at the top of a raised platform that looks like a poorly constructed stage, and together we watch a flock of dark figures ascend the nearest mountain. The dead are gliding away toward the horizon, and I'm powerless to stop them.
Evander,
I murmur to my quiet room near the top of Abathel Castle.
I can't sleep.
There's no hallucination sitting beside me on the bed, not since I've given up the potion. But I can't seem to shake these conversations. I know he's gone, yet here I am, Do you remember the time we snuck into the Deadlands together without Master Simbri? Chasing after that young dead Baron who'd just become a Shade because we thought we could change him back with a vial of honey? I shake my head at the memory. We were lucky that Rocky Threw distracted him. Lucky to get out of there with our lives. I gaze out the room's arched windows at a dark valley that should be flickering with light. With life. Where are Elsinore's exiled dead now? Here's what I've been wondering since the massacre, Van. What if the dead turn into shades when we look at them? Or when they've been in our world too long, because they were never meant to leave the Deadlands at all? The words make me a traitor to the sapphire pins on my chest, Evander's and mine both. But now that I've said it aloud, I can't stop myself. What if I can't find Vane? What if he loses control of his shades? Or worse, what if our magic is the weapon that brings Carthia to its knees? I can practically hear Evander saying it now, carefully weighing each word.
What I do, what we do, brings hope.
Nodding along with his voice in my head, I say, our magic is love triumphing over death. But there's no denying our magic can be deadly. All around me, the sobs of several villages' worth of survivors seep through the floors and echo in the hallways. The survivors are restless in rooms beneath me and around me, and perhaps some of the sick feeling in the pit of my stomach belongs to them, is for them, because I know the ache of loss, thanks to Evander. I hug my knees to my chest and wish all my imagining could conjure the weight of Evander's arms around me one last time. I forgive you for being gone, I whisper. I just wish I could forgive myself. For not saving him. For not saving the people of Elsinore. For allowing Merity to come here and risk her life too. I wipe my soaking face on my sleeve. She reminds me of you, I whisper into the dark. That used to make me miserable, but lately, it's made me happy. I promise I'll keep her safe, Van. Not that she needs protecting. Honestly, she saved me a time or two. I just think you'd like to know someone has your back since you're not here anymore. I sit straight up on the bed, kicking one of the pillows across the room. Why did it have to be Evander? It should have been me who was decimated by that shade. Chapter 24. I pull on my boots and slink through the castle, headed for a stretch of bare earth washed in moonlight, the guards' training grounds. I may not be able to save anyone, living or dead. But beating stuffed dummies with a wooden practice sword? No man or beast in Carthia can stop me from making the straw fly. Except, maybe, the one sitting on a hay bale beneath the archery target, her chin in her hands and her bow in her lap, watching me approach. Let me guess. Merity says mildly as I cross the flat ground cleared for sparring. You couldn't sleep either. Thinking about all the spirits the Deadlands gained today, I drop down beside her. Among other things. She looks so composed, even after the day's tragedies. Her eyes bright and dry. Her long hair brushed and shining. Her clothes clean and unwrinkled. It makes me completely envy her composure. I narrow my eyes at her, searching for some sign that she's troubled by what we saw. Do you ever get mad? Really mad? like you need to hit something or you might explode? Merity frowns slightly as I add, or what about sad? Has anything ever hurt you so much you couldn't hold it all in? Merity grips the bow on her lap, but her expression doesn't change. Yes, of course. Just because you haven't been around me long enough to see me hurt or mad doesn't mean I don't feel everything as deeply as anyone else. Maybe I just have a different way of showing it. Not everyone needs to punch things when they're upset. Her gaze is so intense, I want to look away, but I force myself to keep meeting her eyes. I don't believe you. I think you care more about appearance than how you feel. Merity breaks our stare, glancing over her shoulder at the valley below. Every slight movement, from her restless shifting to wiping her palms on her skirt, sounds too loud in the otherwise silent night. The archery target looms over her, masking her face in shadow. I can't sit here another moment. I steal the bow off Merity's lap and pick up the quiver near her feet, selecting an arrow. Merity turns back to me, a question in her gaze, but I let the thick silence wrap itself tighter around my throat. "Do you even know how to shoot?" Merity calls, heat rippling through her voice. I don't so much as glance at her as I stride over to the line that marks where the archers should stand. Hurrying over, Merity snatches the bow out of my hand and grabs an arrow. I've never seen her glower at anyone quite like this before, and I have to squash a sudden urge to laugh. Best not to tempt her into aiming at me. Merity's lips remain pressed into a thin line as she takes aim and releases the bowstring. I'm angry that my brother's dead and I never really got to know him. Her words ring through the still night as the arrow sails straight to the center circle of the painted target. But I'm too distracted to be properly impressed. My head spins at her sudden confession. Merity studies the target with a satisfied smirk, and as the proud archer's words echo in my mind, I realize there are a lot of things I want to shout into the night, too. Clearing her throat, Merity thrusts the bow at me. Your turn, but don't you dare snap the string or try anything stupid. This is the only one I have. I nod and take aim, resisting the urge to taunt her with a comment about my poor archery skills. I've only practiced with a bow a few times, years ago, with Simeon and Master Nicanor. I've forgotten how much strength is needed to pull the string back and hold it, how much concentration is required to line up the arrow tip with the target. The arrow flies wide. As I watch it, willing a breeze to correct its path, heated words tumble from my lips. I hate that your mother tried to keep me from Evander. Don't get me started on her. Merity grabs the bow back, pressing her lips together like she's trying to keep from grinning at the sight of my arrow lying in the dirt. She takes another perfect shot. I was never what my mother wanted me to be, and I never will be. Her second arrow sticks beside the first. Her face is as calm and proud as ever, while my heart's picking up speed and my blood is running hot. I think of Evander as I aim my next shot and release the bowstring, of King Wilding and the other missing dead. I imagine my arrow gaining speed, catching fire, and plummeting straight into the heart of the rogue necromancer. I think, I'm sick of not being able to protect anyone I care about, no matter how hard I try. But something stops me from saying it aloud. The arrow hits the very bottom of the target, and a flicker of pride curves my lips. Not bad, Sparrow. Merity's eyes seem to shine brighter than usual as she takes the bow back and assumes the archer's stance. With some practice, you might be as good as Fear. She falters, blinking hard. Firiel. As though saying the name took her by surprise, she sinks slowly to her knees and sets her bow aside. Her shoulders quake. She bites down on her trembling lower lip, and a sob escapes her, a desperate sound like an animal caught in a trap. I half sit, half fall down beside her. I don't know what I expected to be hidden under Merity's stiff smile and porcelain skin. Certainly not pain deep enough to destroy her from the inside. Though perhaps I should have seen it all along. She's lost even more than I have. Merity's crying gets louder, drowning out the small night noises of birds and deer and the wind in the trees. It's the kind of cry that shakes her from head to toe, making her fingers curl and her whole body seem to shrink inward, like she wants to disappear. But I don't want her to. I wrap my arms around her, pulling her against me and holding her until her angry cries become soft, hiccuping sobs.
I don't know how you do it, she murmurs.
What?
Before I met you, it wasn't hard to be heartless.
I stroke her wine-red hair. It's not quite as silky as I'd imagined, but it's thick and smells faintly of vanilla and cedar chips and something I can't name. Something that might just be Merity. And I love the way it tangles around my fingers, like it doesn't want to let me go.
Odessa,
Merity draws back, gazing blearily at me. Her face is splotchy and damp. Her lower lip raw where she must have bitten it. And yet, somehow, she looks more beautiful than ever.
Odessa.
She puts a hand on my arm, and I realize I'm still holding her. We break apart. I hastily turn my head, hoping the night air will cool my burning face. I don't even turn back when Merity says,
"You didn't have to do that. I just..."
She pauses, taking a deep breath. "I want to tell you what happened. I want to be strong like you and live with the memory instead of pretending it doesn't exist. We share Evander. And now, I want to share Firiel with someone too."
"All right," I whisper, tucking my hands in my lap.
"Firiel loved to explore the wilds. Maybe more than Lysandre and I did. She never trained as a mage, but she had greener eyes than mine. I used to tell her she'd make an excellent beastmaster." Fresh tears splash down Merity's cheeks as she talks. "A few weeks ago, we went to visit her family's manor in southern Lornes. She asked me to wake up early with her one morning. Said she had something special to show me." She pauses and sniffs, dabbing her nose with her shirt sleeve. I meet her eyes to show I'm listening, and she continues in a hoarse voice. "It was so foggy that morning, I could barely see the ground right in front of me. I told her we could go see whatever it was some other time, that it wasn't worth either of us tripping and breaking our necks. But she insisted." Merity lays a hand on her bow, her tears still falling steadily. "It was a fox's den full of newborn kits. I only saw them for a moment, because we heard men and horses and tried to run, but Firiel..." I nod, eyeing the bow in her hands as goose flesh spreads over my arms, dreading the words to come.
"There were hunters, Meredy says, swallowing a sob.
They must have seen us take off and thought we were deer. I don't know. Viriel was standing beside me one moment, cooing at the foxes, and the next, she was on the ground with an arrow through her. Meredy swallows hard again. The men were really sorry. Not that it mattered. I should have killed them on the spot. But I was too much of a coward to even do that. I watched her family prepare her for burial, dyed my hair, and then fled Lorness. I didn't want to be the person she loved anymore. The person who failed to save her.
What could you possibly have done? No one is as quick as an arrow. I wipe the tears from Meredy's cheeks with my thumbs as fast as I can. They're rough as bark against her dewy skin. If there was a chance you could have saved her, you would have. Besides, there's no point being angry with yourself for something you can't change.
Have you forgiven yourself for what happened to Evander?
Meredy dabs her eyes on her already damp sleeve.
Or did you just get addicted to a potion so you wouldn't have to carry the guilt around?
I open my mouth, but it takes a moment to find words. That's not fair.
Sure it is.
Meredy frowns at me, and her tears finally stop.
You seem to think it's easy for me to forgive myself for not taking that arrow instead of Viriel. But you can't forgive yourself for not letting Evander go into that ravine first.
I gasp.
How did you know? You talked a lot in your sleep during those first few days of potion withdrawal.
Meredy scoots closer, extending a hand.
If you want me to even try to forgive myself, you have to do the same. Deal?
I take her hand, but the simple shake turns into something more. I'm not sure who twines their fingers through the other's first, or how much time passes before both her hands are joined with mine. Only that every slight movement makes my heart jump.
Do you ever get the feeling?
She whispers, her hands suddenly trembling in mine.
That if you make one wrong move, one stupid choice, the whole world will come crashing down around you. All the time.
I shiver in a strong gust of wind, which frees a scrap of old parchment from Meredy's cloak. I watch it flutter to the ground.
What's this?
Nothing, she says quickly, untangling our fingers to grab it. I reach for it too, so fast we almost bump heads. She catches one edge of the parchment while I grab another, stretching it into a flat sheet. If either of us pulls any harder, it'll tear. Naturally, I tug the parchment toward me, forcing Meredy to release it. I turn it over, blinking at an ink-likeness of myself in a familiar style, and my stomach does a flip. Valoria gave you this.
She did.
Meredy leans over the parchment, raising her gaze from the drawing to me.
She has a way of seeing how things are meant to fit together.
Must be those brown eyes of hers, I whisper. Without thinking, I drop the parchment and reach for Meredy. She stiffens, then shivers as I press my palm to her cheek.
We shouldn't. We can't,
she whispers, more to herself than to me, as she touches my waist with both hands. Her fingers are feather light, as though they'll vanish if I startle her the slightest bit. Her lips are red and inviting. She blinks a question at me, lowering the shield that always covers her face. I beckon her closer with a look. I don't know what's gotten into me. My lips burn at the betrayal of sharing breaths with her, but the small clouds of heat against my mouth make me shiver and set me on fire all at once. As I close the remaining distance between us, pulled forward against my will by the invisible strings lashing us together, something moves at the corner of my sight. Startled to my senses, I jerk back before our lips can touch, gazing up in time to see a winged shadow crossing the moon, and whatever spell was cast here is broken. "A messenger, Raven," Merity murmurs, low and urgent, as if she's already putting what almost happened out of her mind. The bird's shape becomes clearer as it descends toward the castle. "It's frightened and in a hurry. We should have a peek at its message, just in case it's from Grenwyr." I finish, leaping to my feet. She tosses me a strange, unreadable look, and my head spins with the realization of what we almost did. "I'm sorry, Evander," I mutter under my breath as we start to run, because all I can think of are his sister's vivid green eyes and the way she makes my blood run hot every time she opens her mouth. And when I try to remember what it was like to kiss Evander, I imagine kissing Merity instead. We race to the front of the castle, where the Raven appears to be heading, with Merity in the lead. I hold up my arm and let it fly to me, only wincing slightly as its claws graze my bare skin. Merity breaks the ties around the letter strapped to the Raven's leg with her fingernail, then leans in as she unfurls the parchment. I draw back, careful not to get too close to her again. My blood runs cold as I recognize Simeon's loopy scrawl. "More dead or missing, including Her Majesty," I read aloud. "It happened right after you left, and no one's seen Hadrian for hours. There's panic in the city. Don't return to Grenwyr, dear sister. Go to the coast. Or better yet, take a ship and set sail. Love, Simeon." Crumpling the parchment in my fist, I take a deep breath and fight a sudden urge to scream. I have to stop this. All the death and disappearances. And Vane is my one lead, whether he's the one who stole the dead from the palace or not. "Get Lysander," I say softly, trying to keep my voice from shaking with rage. "I'm going to wake Master Cimbri and show her this." I hold up the wrinkled letter. "We're going to the Deadlands now. All this fear and hurting has got to end. And there's only one person I know of who might be able to tell us something useful." Chapter 25. Master Cimbri's room is empty. A hint of spice and leather hangs in the air, a sure sign that she was here not too long ago. Yet all her things are gone. Her sword, her boots, and the tiny book of poems she carries everywhere. The bed is neatly made, as perfect as though she never slept in it. Merity peers at something dropped behind a chair, then checks inside the wardrobe, her brows knitting together in concern. "There's no sign of a struggle." Lysander watches from the doorway, unable to squeeze his bulk across the threshold. "Right. I doubt rogue necromancers forcing her into the Deadlands would have made sure she had time to pack her favorite book and her weapon," I murmur, thinking aloud. "Besides, when Master Nicanor was abducted, there was evidence of a fight at his house. The only other option here is that Cimbri went against the rules she taught me for most of my life. That she went into the Deadlands alone of her own free will." A faint blue glow from the windows draws my attention. There's a gate to the Deadlands, a brisk walk from the castle. Master Cimbri must have entered it to find Vane after hearing about the massacre, after promising me she'd rest.
I know that's what happened, because it's exactly the sort of thing I would do. It's what I did do when I needed to prevent the shade that killed Evander from taking any more lives. For better or worse, she brought me up to be just like her, risking everything to protect the people she loves.
She's gone, I whisper. She went to the Deadlands alone, to protect us, to protect all these people. But if Vane is there, she'll need our help. Who knows how many shades he'll have with him?
We're going after her.
The Sander can track her scent if we let him sniff her pillow. Merity's eyes glitter in the candlelight, hard and determined. Some part of me wishes there was time to kiss her firmly set mouth, to finish what we started and see if it's something I'd want to do again. To see if she tastes like Evander, or if there's something distinct about Merity that's making me crave her like this. Sleeping in Jax's bed never made me feel this guilty. But maybe that's because with Jax, I didn't really think about it. About him. My time with him was always an escape from thoughts of Evander, like my potion addiction. What's happening with Merity feels like a force all its own, as strong and perplexing as lightning. I can't think about her this way. Not now, or ever. But especially not when Master Simbri's in danger. When someone's life depends on it. Shoving Merity firmly to the back of my mind, I turn to the small writing desk in the far corner of the room and pick up a quill and parchment from a tray. Before we go, I'll tell Jax and Simeon where we're headed, just in case. A short while later, we breeze past several stunned guards and out the back gates of Abathil Castle, with Lysander bounding ahead. We have to go through a gate to the Deadlands, I murmur, glancing at Merity through the inky darkness that settled over the grounds. Clouds have rolled in since our earlier target practice, blotting out the stars. I offer Merity my hand. Much as I'm afraid of what her touch might make me feel. You'll have to hold on to me, because you can't see it. She finishes for me, taking my hand. Evander trusted you. That means I trust you too. As we jump into the gate, just a short leap off the ground, she mutters. Besides, if you screw this up, I'll tell Lysander he can snack on you. It takes Merity a few moments to get her bearings inside the tunnel. Brushing dirt off her clothes, she keeps her head carefully turned to the lichen-covered wall, like she doesn't want me to see her face. Somehow, she commanded Lysander to leap through the gate after us without uttering a word. And now she keeps him by her side in the tunnel without the use of a chain. It seems she can't stop him from snarling and pacing around us, though. I wonder if he's remembering the last time we were here. Merity takes my hand again as we hurry down the tunnel. Her fingers burn where they clutch mine, and I wish I could let go, but I don't want her getting lost. The Deadlands have ways of calling to anyone living, luring them into forgetting why they'd ever want to return to the other world, the world where they belong. For Merity, it'll probably be Firial who appears to lure her into staying. But no matter what we encounter, I'm going to keep Merity alive. I can't lose her, not after how much trouble I went through to save her the first time. Not after we finally started talking about Evander, sharing memories to keep him with us. Not after, well, everything she's become to me. Lysander's found something. Merity squeezes my elbow, jarring me back to the present. Which way? I demand, putting a hand on my sword. The bear gazes straight ahead at one of the Deadlands' many gardens. I take a step toward it, but Merity holds me back, her hand turning cold in mine.
She's nowhere near here, she says in a dreamy, distant voice, not quite like her own.
Her face is completely blank. A shiver runs through me as I realize Lysander's eyes are glowing a vivid green, identical to hers. Somehow, she's searching his thoughts in a way I've never seen before.
Then we'd better start running, I murmur. Now that we're in the Deadlands, there could be shades nearby. Or the very man I'd like to catch by surprise.
No. To my relief, Merity sounds more like herself. She meets my gaze, then nods to Lysander.
Riding will be much faster.
Every necromancer should see the Deadlands on the back of a grizzly, I decide as I settle myself on Lysander's warm bulk. The view is different somehow. Sharper, with every twisted tree and every moonflower seeming to jump out at me, vying for my attention. Merity sits in front of me, and at her urging, I wrap my arms around her waist. My heart taps out its excitement against my ribs, and there's nothing I can do, save for letting go of Merity's soft curves, or tucking my nose into my shirt so I don't have to breathe her subtle vanilla scent that makes my head spin to slow it down. I just hope she can't feel the faint pounding against her back, or hear the slight quickening of my breath. Lysander picks up speed, and I grip Merity tighter. He seems to be following the meander of a dark and icy river. As the water rushes past in a blur, my thoughts turn to Master Cimbri. The day she first came to see me at Death's Convent, her face was less lined and her fiery hair had no trace of gray. She wanted to be a mentor, not a mother, but I was 10 years old and I didn't know the difference. We both learned a lot that first year, as she tried to pass on her knowledge of the dead, while I tried on her clothes and lip rouge and begged to sleep in her bed. Wind chills the tips of my ears as Lysander carries us through a grove of trees that have dropped their silver leaves. I asked Master Cimbri about the seasons in the Deadlands once. I think I was 12. She couldn't explain why there weren't any, she said. Any better than her mentor could when she'd asked the very same thing. But she still knew a lot more than I did, and I never stopped relying on her to answer my impossible questions. Why the moon turns blood red sometimes. Why we can't look upon the dead without them turning into shades. Why Simeon doesn't like kissing girls, only boys, but I like both. Why love hurts when it's the thing we live for. The thing some people search their entire lives for. The thing some people die for. Why I don't know where I belong.
With me, chickadee, Master Cimbri would sing song when I asked her that, in the years before I started going by Sparrow. She's never been my mother. She's always held a little something of herself back from me. Just enough to remain as mysterious as Vaya, the five-faced god who created our world and then vanished long ago. But she's all I have. All that's left of our trio, which once felt invincible.
You're quiet back there, Merity murmurs, gazing at me over her shoulder. Everything all right? I nod, still lost in memories. Like the day Master Cimbri first took Evander and me into the Deadlands and explained the price of our magic.
that while we could come here and have the freedom to bring spirits back to their bodies, our spirits would never rest here when we died. We'd just disappear. It seemed so unfair to 10-year-old me. I'd flopped down under a silvery tree and cried so hard I gave myself hiccups. Nothing we got in return for raising the dead. Invitations to all the palace parties, the fame, the heaps of gold for each person we brought back to life seemed to be a good exchange for our spirits. All magic has a price, Master Simbri told me more than once. If it didn't, every blue-eyed person would raise all their loved ones, and Cardia would be overrun with dead. If gray-eyed people could change the path of a huge storm without giving themselves a stroke, we'd never have to fear another dark cloud. Sounds like a perfect world, I'd grumbled. But Master Simbri had merely smiled. You wouldn't think it was perfect. There would be other problems. Cardia would be crowded, restless, and miserable.
What are you trying to say? I demanded.
I'm saying we make our own problems. As long as people exist, she'd said, her steely blue eyes focused intently on mine. There will be trouble and discontent and rumblings of how things could be better. There is no perfect.
Merity gives me another worried look. And my face warms as I realize I've been staring absently into the distance. Still, the heat in my cheeks feels good compared to the cold breeze that's numbing every bit of my exposed skin as Lysander bounds up the side of a small mountain, his pace never lagging.
What's the price of a Beastmaster's magic? I ask her, careful to keep my voice low. If Merity's surprised by the question, she doesn't show it. When we exercise any amount of control over our beasts, she murmurs, we become like them for a little while. Feral. In possession of only our most basic instincts. I think of how different she sounded as she searched her bear's mind earlier. You didn't seem very beastly after you and Lysander did your silent talking thing. That's because it was brief. Just a little magic. I wasn't trying to see through his eyes, or to fully possess him and force his limbs to move. Merity's lips twist in a grim smile. As you've seen, I'm quite capable of controlling my less human urges.
Like what? I ask, trying to distract myself from thoughts of Master Simbri fighting for her life, from horrible scenarios playing out in my mind like a shadow puppet play on a wall. Eating raw fish? Running naked through the Deadlands?
Merity doesn't answer. It's hard to tell in the Deadlands' perpetual dimness. But her cheeks look redder than usual. I wish I could read her mind right now. Instead, I'm left alone with my thoughts. I should have paid more attention to Master Simbri after Master Nicanor's death. I was so caught up in trying to get revenge on the giant shade and in grieving for Evander that I didn't notice how she must have been grieving too. Maybe we could have mourned together. Maybe if she'd thought I was willing to listen, trusted that I wasn't some potion addict trying to escape the past anymore, she would have told me what she was planning tonight. But I'd sided with the healer and insisted she rest. I should have known better. She's too much like me to just sit on her hands and wait when something is wrong. She's doing this to protect me. Lysander suddenly comes to a halt on a narrow stretch of beach beside a large, dark lake, breathing hard. Merity leans forward, wordlessly talking with him again. He stomps a huge paw and lowers his head. There in the sand, right beneath Lysander's nose, are a few fiery red hairs streaked with gray. I scramble off the bear's back and drop to my knees, sifting through the chilled sand for any other sign that Simbri was here, for any reason to hope she's still alive. Merity joins me, walking up and down the lakeshore so many times, I get dizzy watching her. "Don't touch the water, not even with your boot," I warn her over the lump in my throat as Merity's path veers closer to the water's edge, as she moves farther out of my reach. There are a few spirits floating farther out in the lake, toward the middle. From shore, they look like mist or fallen clouds as they hover on the water's surface. They don't notice us, too busy forgetting who and what they were as the lake strips away their dearest memories. I don't want that to happen to Merity, and all it would take is one accidental step into the water to make her forget something about herself. "We should move on," I tell Merity as she strides toward me again. "Can Lysander try to pick up Simbri's scent again?" Merity shakes her head, her face pale. "The trail ends here." I swallow hard as a wave of cold crashes over my head. Does that mean I can't finish? I can't go through this again? Merity steadies me with a hand on my shoulder, and after a moment, I find my voice again. "There's no body. How can we be sure she's dead if there's no body?" "Breathe," Merity urges, squeezing my shoulder. "Where's her sword if she's really dead? She wouldn't have gone looking for the Shade Baiter if she didn't have her sword and her..." "She's dead, I assure you. She made a nice meal for my hungry shades," a harsh voice says, causing us to whirl toward the sound. "As will you both, very soon." Chapter 26. Even with his tall form hidden beneath a handsome cobalt cloak, his face obscured and his eyes shadowed by a painted silver mask, I'd recognize him anywhere thanks to his gravelly voice. Vane, the powerful rogue necromancer, strides briskly down the shore toward us. I draw my sword and step in front of Merity and her grizzly, the necromancer's words cutting into me like a dagger to the stomach, laying my insides open. Simbri's dead, and all her stories, her hopes, her loves, her wisdom have died with her. Lysander growls, low and menacing. Several more cloaked figures form a half circle around us, creeping closer by the moment. If we want to flee, we'll have to go through them, or swim out into the lake, which is as good as a death sentence. Vane holds a broadsword at his side. It's so much larger than mine, I don't know that I have a hope of matching him in strength. But I might be quicker, and perhaps smarter, too. It isn't until I spot the five shades waiting in the distance, in the field at the necromancer's backs, that my heart seizes, and I don't know how we're going to make it out of here alive, but we have to try. I raise my sword. "Vane," another of the cloaked shade-baiters, if that's what they are, mutters worriedly. "Don't forget to collect the sparrow's pin as proof of her death." She locks eyes with me,
He could stiff us if we don't follow orders exactly as he gave them.
Who's he? I glance briefly at the woman.